This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Tucci Ristorante, an Italian dining house honoring the memory of Mary Cipolla Matucci and the spirit of the Lido restaurant in which she worked for 50 years. Tucci Ristorante features sustainable Northwest ingredients, drinks in the Lido bar, and is open every day in downtown Lake Oswego. Information at tucci.biz. That's TUCCI.BIZ.
Good morning. This is Kathleen Stevenson for Art Focus. My guest is Portland artist Deb Stoner. For over three decades, Deb Stoner's art-making practice has included making jewelry, designing eyewear, and photographing the world around her. Today, we are going to be talking about her current photography work, which was inspired by the work of Carl Blosfeldt. Her botanical portraits magnify and reveal details within the natural structures of the plants she photographs. Deb Stoner's work currently is on exhibit at the Camera Work Gallery, which is in Peterson Hall at the Linfield College Nursing School campus, which is at 2255 Northwest Northrop Street. And Deb also has a large diptych on display as part of a faculty show at the Hoffman Gallery at the Oregon College of Art and Craft. Deb Stoner, thanks for being with me on Art Focus today.
Thanks, Kathleen.
I wanted to try to describe to listeners the botanical portraits that are on display at Camera Work. They're black and white portraits or photographs of combinations of plants, and there are many kinds of plants: strawberries, marigolds, peonies, poppies, columbine, kiwi, clover, zucchini, dandelions, okra. I mean, you probably could go on for quite a while talking about which plants are there. And they're larger than life because they've been magnified, and so you see quite detailed textures and other aspects of these plants. And sometimes there are insects on them and other surprising elements. Is that a fair description, or how would you add to that, or how would you describe the work that we're talking about?
That's a great description. Oh. It makes a lot of sense that you've described them as very focused and very inclusive of all of these different varieties of plants. That's a really big one. When I first started making these portraits, it was because my husband and I grow these crazy marigolds. We've been hybridizing them for years and years. And hybridizing to us just means we save the seeds from one year and then we plant them the next year. And one year we thought, well, how can we make a record of these plants? How can we see what we've done from year to year besides just poking each other in the ribs and saying, wow, look at that? So one day I was taking a class at the Oregon College of Art and Craft, where they have this beautiful scanner and a terrific printer. And the teacher had put a bouquet of flowers on the scanner and said, here's how you make scans. And this light bulb went off, and I thought, that's what I can do. So I brought armloads of marigolds to the school, and I started making these sort of just portraits of them, but they were really just copies of them. They were really just like putting the flower on a Xerox machine and pressing the button. And as cool as that was, I realized I was just scratching the surface. So the work that's at Camera Work right now is the result of doing this type of work and finding that pace, finding that place of what am I doing that's different than just making a Xerox of a flower. And that happened when I started bringing armloads of flowers, laying them on the scanner, and instead of just laying them on the scanner, I started to make compositions out of them. I started taking my long, big art background and saying, well, where's the movement in this? How is your eye moving across the page? And then I realized when I started making these very large that I had a lot of information that I could work with. And so these particular portraits at Camera Work Gallery are actually cropped sections of much larger compositions that happen to intrigue me and make me feel like they're standalone portraits. So they're 11 and a half by, I mean, eight, what are they? They're 11 by 14, which is a really standard size in the photographic world. But in digital world, is sometimes it starts to feel almost small and precious. And so I love that. I love that they are intensely focused in some parts. In other parts, there's an incredible blur that happens that allows your eye to really track and find what the composition is. And then like you expressed a little bit earlier, that there's some surprises in there.
Right.
Sometimes the surprises surprise even me.
Yeah. And just one thing that I wondered about, because I'm just used to seeing a real basic scanner in an office situation. Can you describe the scanner that you use? Is it larger? Is it more finely tuned? What is it that makes it be able to take these incredible photographs is what they are, right?
It is, and that's a really interesting distinction because some people, once they hear the fact that they were created using a scanner as the camera, they put it in a different category. But all you're doing with digital machines these days is capturing pixels and gathering them into a place where you can then create an image. And so for me, the scanner is simply a horizontal camera with a lot of surface area to create a very large and very magnified area that you're going to look at. So the scanner I use, it's an Epson V700. And what that is that makes it special is that it's good at capturing a lot of details, a lot of image information in an 8.5 by 11 portrait size. So it's not huge. 8.5 by 11, that's a standard size. But when you scan at very high resolution, you can then magnify that information quite a bit.
Right. Yeah. And how much are your pieces magnified, the ones at the Camera Work? Are they all magnified the same amount, or how does that work?
They're magnified for the most part about the same amount, and that's usually about 16 times. So if you have a tiny little bud on a plant, and then you start to imagine it going up once, and then twice, and then four times, and then 16 times, then you're magnifying something that's a quarter of an inch up to an inch, and then some of the other pieces are quite a bit more magnified. It depends on how much of a large image I've cropped.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And is there in this process that you're using to do these portraits, how do you compose? I mean, what do you think about when you're composing these pieces?
Well, when I make one of these pictures, what I do is the first thing that happens is that somehow something's caught my eye. I'm driving along the road and, whoa, what is that in bloom right there? Or my husband calls from the yard, wow, look what the cat just brought in. You know, he chases bugs. And so maybe that's something that I need to take a picture of. So the process is always starts with, what's that? The other thing is, the magnification of this is really something quite profound. And to me, with aging eyes, you know, I need readers to see anything anymore. I can't see the detail that I used to be able to see. So a lot of my curiosity happens when I see something that is an inch in diameter, and I want to see that really close. And then when I magnify it, I see things that I never could have imagined are there. So that's the start of the process is always, what the heck is that? And then what can I do with that? And then, so I start gathering flowers usually. Our yard has an amazing amount of variety of flowers. And what's great is that it changes daily. You know, I might have missed a particular time in the life cycle of a plant that I'm very interested in, and I have to wait until next year until it happens again, and I might miss it then as well. So I gather a lot of plants. I have neighbors and friends who are super generous with, come on over anytime. And they're happy to have me show up with my clippers and a big basket. And so I just spend time clipping the flowers. And I don't really know what the composition is going to be until I get it home and then start working on that flat horizontal surface. It has to be done with some urgency because a lot of really delicate flowers, once they're out of water or once they're cut, they don't have much oomph. And once they wilt, it's a dead giveaway. As much as I'm interested in the sort of historical background of botanical portraits, there's a lot of people who document the timing of how things die and how things live and include time in that. My interest in that is, what does it look like right now? Mm-hmm. And I have a very short amount of time to do that. So usually what I do is I just start with a focal point somewhere in, and that usually is dependent on how big the flowers are. So if I have got something very large and I want that to be the focal point, it's probably the first thing I might lay down. So I'm working directly on the skin or glass, which is an interesting direction when you've worked with a camera all of your life and you're working in a vertical scenario. The other thing is that when you work directly on the skin or glass, anything that touches the glass is an extreme detail. So that's in focus. Anything that's not on the scanner glass starts to lose its dimensionality and its focus and creates a beautiful blur pretty quickly. So there's actually, when you look at these portraits, there's not a lot of it that's in intense focus. There's quite a lot of blur that happens in a really, that creates a dynamic that's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then I push the button, just like any photographer would. You push the button, you look at what you've got, and then you end up rearranging and then pushing the button a lot more times until I find the image capture that really makes the image material sing.
Right, and that was a question I had, was what is it like to fail in this process? I mean, is it a lot of financial investment because you've put a huge sheet of paper that's very expensive there and the piece doesn't come out, or do they always come out, or what is that whole element of your work?
Well, the paper comes in much later.
Oh, okay.
So, in fact, most of my work, I would say, resides as pixels on my big, massive hard drive, which is becoming exceedingly difficult to find things, because organizations, that's a little tricky. Printing is really the last thing that I think about. And so the big, expensive papers, they come into play, but I'm pretty much aware of what the thing is going to look like before I press those particular buttons. In the image making, what's interesting and how the world of photography has happened is that, you know, we used to use film and talk about expensive and pushing that shutter and then sending the film out and waiting several days to get the results to find out if you've succeeded or failed was always a very I've got my fingers crossed and I'm hoping this is going to work out. With the digital capture, it's instant. And so even though the images that I'm making are very large, very slow to capture because it's a lot of data that's being processed, at any point I can just erase it, gather my flowers off the scanner, clean the scanner glass, and start over.
Hmm. Yeah. And you mentioned the fragility issue. There are elements in these portraits that are dandelion, the kind of form of dandelion that we're accustomed to, that's very fragile, the stage of the dandelion blooming, that's like that. And how do you deal with that without destroying some of these elements?
Well, what's interesting to me and continues to fascinate me is that even the most delicate things, if you can really gently handle them, they have a sturdiness that's really kind of amazing. I noticed that with sort of a clobber to my head one time when I was working with this incredibly fragile and delicate poppy. It was a large Hungarian blue-bred poppy. These things are, you know, it's 4 inches in diameter, and it feels like the petals are made of the most delicate, you know, tissue paper. And then involved in the middle of it is this incredible part that has all the pollen-covered parts. I am not a botanist, you can tell, right? Pollen-covered parts. What the heck's that? But anyway, I would lay this beautiful blossom on the scanner, and parts of the petals would wrinkle and crease, but in that manner then became, it looked like something very different than anything that I'd ever seen a portrait of that particular flower look like. And so in this way of the thing is going to be what it's going to be, I'm just trying to treat it with the utmost tenderness and carefulness to not crush it. All of that ends up being sort of even a metaphor for what I'm trying to do with the work. I'm not trying to direct it too much. I'm not trying to crush its spirit. I'm trying to just show what is there. And in that way, when I've talked about the surprises that come from the work, you know, sometimes there's a piece that might have aphids on the stem. Columbine are famous for that. I don't see them when I'm picking them. I'm looking at that beautiful blossom, and it's not until it's magnified at 16 times that I can see that little peekaboo of the aphid. And those are kind of incredible looking too. And that's why I started including bugs and insects in my portraits, because their body parts and their personalities give so much more to the pictures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Talk about the Sarasota bee.
The Sarasota bee. Well, let's see. So last spring, my husband and I were in Sarasota, Florida, working on a project. We were outdoors, and Sarasota, Florida has a lot of bug life. But there was this giant bee that was that parked itself on a park bench near where we were working, and just sat there and sat there. And I thought, that guy's dying, I bet. So if he's still there by the time we're ready to pack up and leave this afternoon, I'm going to take him with me. So I did. He was ready to go. I put him in my coffee cup, put the lid on, stuck him in the freezer, which is a good, well-known sort of humane way to urge on the passing of your bugs, and took him home. Yeah, hand carried him in the luggage, and TSA said nothing.
So he is a star of at least one of your
projects. He's a star of quite a few of them. What's interesting is when an insect has a specific position, such as you might learn if you take a class in how to spread a bug or a beetle, which my husband and I did earlier this year at Paxton Gate, an amazing little store in Mississippi. Shout out to them, because we took a class and learned how to move the little legs and the wings and put them in the places I might think. So what that does to me in my world when I'm in our garden is I've learned to really watch how the bees interact with the flowers, how do their wings act when they're sitting on a flower and their legs are working, but their wings might be resting? And if you get the wings in the wrong position, it's sort of the giveaway that this portrait is a fake. Mm-hmm. And I'm not really interested in that. I'm not interested in having people think, oh, that's how she did it. I'm interested in, like, wow, that looks amazing. Right. So that's my goal.
Right. And there is that factor when you're looking at your work. And I want to let people know that I am speaking with Deb Stoner. This is Art Focus. And I'm Kathleen Stevenson. We are talking about Deb Stoner's current show at Camerawork Gallery. You can also see images of her work at her website, debstoner.com. And also right now at the Oregon College of Art and Craft, the Huffman Gallery. She has a large color diptych of this kind of work. And I should mention again that the work at Camerawork is black and white, and it's smaller than the work at OCAC. Talk a little bit about the difference between the two, the reason for the black and white as opposed to the color.
Okay. When I first started making this work, color is the only thing I really thought about. The flowers are so beautiful, and the colors, you know, in nature, you can put a purple with an orange and a blue and a yellow and all together, and things that matching doesn't, it's not even a word in nature, because they all look amazing together. And the color just was so dazzling. The first print, I was taking a class up at OCAC, and they have a super nice big printer. And my teacher was urging me to prepare something so that I could print it really big. So I'm like, great, sure, okay. Let's see how it looks big. I never thought about that. And a 34 by 44 print came out of that printer, and I just about fell over. It just blew me away. The size, the detail, the colors were really, really amazing. And so for probably 2 years, it never occurred to me that anything but the color would be what my work would be about. It seemed to be such a strong component. But the larger works that I'm doing are incredibly busy. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of square footage when you print on a very large scale. So there's a lot more players, a lot more actors in my pieces when they're quite large. So when I started cropping some of the pieces, a friend of mine, Judy, she had mentioned, you know, there's that guy that you've been in love with forever, that Carl Blossfeldt guy. And I thought, oh, duh. So I ended up dropping the color out of some of these pieces and really started realizing that the inspiration of an artist who I'd been inspired for over 20 years really finally hit me over the head, that that's kind of the work that I was anticipating and trying to get to. So it was really nice to have this challenge of a show at Camerawork Gallery to focus and say, okay, I've got a consistent size, scale, drama that I'm trying to do, and the job for me was to learn a printing technique that sort of replicated using modern tools, using the digital printer, but gorgeous modern fine art papers, to try to kind of capture almost a photogravure look in the work. And once I finally hit on it, by working really hard, camera work was really camera work, then it was very satisfying to capture that black and white tonal varieties, and just really feel like I had done what I tried to do.
Mm-hmm. So. And just Carl Blossfeldt is just a little bit more information about him and what he did, and how he died in 1932, so his work was of a different era.
Yeah, he was a teacher. He worked in Germany, and he was actually a sort of a technician, and he was asked by somebody in the sculpture department to make portraits of flower parts and botanical parts so that those inspirations could be utilized by students of architecture and sculpture to be able to understand forms in nature. And at some point, he found a publisher. Very near the end of his life, actually, a book was published called Art Forms in Nature in Germany in, what was that, late 1920s, I think, very near before his death. But it's still used as sort of a textbook for informing anybody about the forms of botany. And what was great to learn for me was that just as a way of creating his portraits of the flowers, in the early 1920s, you know, photography was extremely expensive, and cameras that would capture magnified devices were few and far between. He had created a camera for himself, and then when he was taking portraits, he would line up a bunch of stuff, tack it to a wall. He had 8 to 10 minute exposures. He would take a portrait, and then he would cut that negative all up and then only print parts of the information that he wanted to create. And so when I thought about this work for Camera Work Gallery, I thought, I'm just going to channel Carl Blossfeld. I'm going to just take that energy and say, he cropped it, I can crop it. And he made these beautiful prints. And what I'm really going to try to do is create that same kind of beauty.
Mm-hmm. And that gets to an issue maybe in our last few minutes here. You say you're unapologetic about beauty in your work. Can you talk a little bit more about that, what that means to you, is a beautiful piece, a beautiful image?
I think it's enough. I think it's really hard to create something that is simply beautiful. That maybe, you know, there's the angst involved in my work is like, can I do it? Can I pull it off? Mm-hmm. Is it beautiful? So that's what my work's really about, is just coming up with as beautiful an object as I can make it. And I guess that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have you learned a lot about plants doing this work?
I have. I still don't know the names of them. I'm very proud when I can actually remember the Solanum pyracanthum or something like that. But more commonly, I'll remember the common name for a plant. The parts of plants I've learned a lot about, but also just things like, Fred, one time he found a chrysalis on the side of our a greenhouse, and he pulled it off the wall and put it under a strainer and thought, I wonder what's going to happen to that thing. And a few days later, we both happened to be in the greenhouse at the same time, and he said, that thing is moving. And that thing moving, we were able to watch that butterfly emerge from the chrysalis. And at that point, I finally understood the life cycle of a butterfly. Mm-hmm. And I never did before that time. I mean, that's something you learn when you're 8 or 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But I would always get it mixed up. Now, when is the caterpillar and what's the chrysalis again? So, yes, yeah. I've learned a lot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And do you hibernate with this kind of work in the wintertime? I mean, can you do this kind of work in the winter?
The winter is you're very astute in thinking, like, oh, maybe there's not as much plant matter. I have done some winter portraits, and some of the things that you notice in the winter are quite more stark, less colorful, and but beautiful nevertheless. But that's also a good time to, like, get my digital gear in order. Mm-hmm. And actually, just, it's still a lot in front of my computer, just making these images. So that's a better time for that.
Mm.
I'm also trying to think of the scanner as a portable camera that's just tethered to a laptop. So with that information, I'm starting to think about, like, could I take this on the road? Can I go to the flowers? Yeah.
Well, Deb, I want to thank you very much for coming in and talking about this. It was great to see your work and great to hear you talk about it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kathleen. I appreciate being here.
And I want to let people know that this has been Art Focus on KBOO Portland. I'm Kathleen Stevenson. My guest is Portland artist Deb Stoner. She has her show of botanical portraits at the Camerawork Gallery at 2255 Northwest Northrop Street. That gallery is in Peterson Hall at Linfield College Nursing School campus. Show runs through July 31st, and she also has a large color diptych in the current show at the Hoffman Gallery at Oregon College of Art and Craft. You can see her work on her website at debstoner.com. If you missed part of the show or want to hear it again, you can go to kboo.fm/artfocus. The audio should be up on our site within the next hour. I'm Kathleen Stevenson for Art Focus. Tune in next Tuesday when Joseph Galavan will interview Dawson Carr on Gods and Heroes at the Portland Art Museum. Thanks, Janet, for engineering.
Tune in Tuesday night at 6 p.m. to Out Loud, KBOO's queer culture radio show.
Out Loud celebrates and serves the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, and allied communities.
Out Loud features interviews with local and national community groups, authors, musical talent, and anyone from the queer community.
Connect with us online at kboo.fm/outloud. Tune in Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
Mamas están aquí para darles información, música y diversión con el show de Mujeres Bravas los domingos desde las 12 hasta la 1:30 de la tarde.
El que se quede en su silla sentado, que se haga.